Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what criteria were used to choose which songs to include on the album Yiddish Glory?
Du bist nicht mein erster Säune, hob geat a Sache Säune, ich will noch verschreiben euch dein Nomen in dem Zettel, wo's heit sich mit Omen. Omen Antiochus, doch wie Made Krusche, wann oben die Welt verchippt, ist früher noch vor dir. A langer Zettel, Omen, sie ist verrannt, es wird nicht stehen, kein Papier. Hat ihr alle sich ein Ziel gestellt, mich hopp zu mecken, von der Welt noch nicht an euch ist es gewendet. Stalin wird schon kurz an euch die Hand. Antiochus, Torque, Made, Krusche, wann haben die Welt verhippest, früher noch vor dir. A langer Zettel, Omen, sie ist verrannt, es wird nicht stehen, kein Papier. Nor will du narrisch, ist dein böser Treu, mir werden leben, sei wie sei, dein Soffen sei nach Fomens Bäum. Am Israel,
the song you just heard was Purim Gifts for Hitler from Yiddish Glory, The Lost Songs of World War II. The song compares Hitler with other failed enemies of the Jewish people, including Haman from the Book of Esther, Torquemada, the head of the Spanish Inquisition, and Pavel Krushevan, the alleged author of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. The last line of the song says, Am Israel Hai, the Jewish people lives. This album is a recording of music created during the darkest chapter of European Jewish history. In the midst of World War II, Soviet ethnomusicologists from the Kiev Cabinet for Jewish Culture, led by ethnomusicologist Moisei Beregovsky, discovered songs written by Jewish Red Army soldiers, refugees, victims, and survivors of Ukrainian ghettos. Their plans were to publish an anthology of these songs, but the project was never completed as Beregovsky was arrested in 1950 at the height of Stalin's anti-Jewish purge. The songs were thought to have been lost, but in the 1990s they were discovered in unmarked boxes stored in the archives of the Vernadsky National Library of Ukraine. Librarian Lyudmila Sholokhova then created the first catalog since the original one was destroyed in the 1940s. In the early 2000s, a lucky coincidence brought Yiddish professor Anna Sternschis to Kiev, where she learned that these songs had survived all of these decades following the researchers' arrests. Most of the documents were only written lyrics, and Sternschis worked with Dr. Pavel Leon, better known under his artistic name, Psoy Korolenko, who put them to music in order to bring these songs to both academic and popular audiences in 21st century North America and Europe. The album, Yiddish Glory, released in February 2018, is the fruit of this process. For the first time, we can hear the voices of the Soviet Jews who were thought to be silenced by Hitler and Stalin. This week, we're speaking with Dr. Sternschis about the project and the music.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Anna. Can you first tell us a little bit about the background of this music, about Beregovsky's project and who sponsored it and when it took place and where?
Well, so the Ukrainian Academy of Science had a small division called the Cabinet for Jewish Culture. It was a small department that studied Jewish folklore and Jewish linguistics in the 1930s. And by the end of 1930s, there were about 5 to 7 people working in that institution. When the war began in the Soviet Union in 1941, the director of the archive, Eli Spivak, who was a linguist, and also the head of the ethnomusicology section, Moisey Berigovsky, went to Central Asia because they were evacuated there by the Soviet government as part of the Ukrainian Academy of Science. That's what was during World War II. So officially, the cabinet was not working up until 1944. Nevertheless, Berigovsky and his colleagues spent these first 3 years of the war recording songs and stories from Polish Jewish refugees and from Soviet Jews who ended up in Central Asia during the war. There were about 1.4 million Soviet Jews who survived the war in Central Asia, and also another 250,000 Polish Jews who ended up there. Also, they received letters written by Jewish Red Army soldiers who were serving in the front, writing songs about what was they witnessed or what they have done in Yiddish. In 1944, the cabinet, the war, Berigovsky came back to Kiev, to Ukraine, that was recently liberated by the Red Army, and started looking for the survivors who could tell them what happened. And for the next 3 years, from 44 to 47, they recorded more Yiddish songs about the destruction of Jews there and also about the experiences. And then in 1948, the cabinet was closed by Joseph Stalin, who adopted discriminative policies towards Jews. And Berigovsky went to jail. He was released from jail only in 1956. And he believed, and we believed too, that all the songs that he collected during the war were lost, because when he was arrested, Stalin's government seized the documents.
So in other words, so they collected both folk music and music that had been written?
He collected folk music that was written down by sometimes by professionals and sometimes by amateur collectors.
But none of the music was originally written?
Oh, so yeah, I know what you mean. So most of the songs were sang to the already existing tunes. They were not popular ones. They were not usually creating new tunes. And that's a normal, usual process in folklore. The new texts come first and then music comes later.
How many songs were collected altogether?
They collected thousands of songs, but of them, about 200 to 250 dealt specifically with the experiences of World War II. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, a lot of documents that were previously confiscated by Stalin's secret police were found in different Soviet archives. And in the basement of the Ukrainian National Library, they found some boxes with Yiddish documents in them, handwritten ones. And the librarians preserved these documents without knowing what they were, and not being allowed to, I think, properly catalog them or deal with them. So in the 90s, it turns out that this was the lost collection of the Kiev Cabinet for Jewish Culture, and the last project of Moisey Berigovsky. And then they created the catalog in the late 90s of these documents. And that's how I was able to find out that they existed, that they survived. And then started working with these materials and decided that it would be really interesting to not just talk about this, but actually sing these songs for the first time since 1940s, when they were first recorded, when they were first written down, not recorded as music. And that's how the project Yiddish Glory started.
So all of these songs were written on paper. None of them were actually recorded.
There is a rumor that there are some recordings actually on technology. I have not seen it. I tried to find it and I asked librarians to help me, but they tool, we're not able to find it. So maybe they exist. All I work with are the materials and the written down documents. Some of them have musical notations written next to them, but most of them have nothing, just the words.
What are the songs about?
Different things. Some of the songs talk about what it's like to fight in the army. They're very brutal. They're very cruel. They're merciless. They talk about hate. They talk about revenge. They call for destruction of fascism. And they also call for individual to actually take charge and killing as many Germans as possible. So these are motivation songs of the war. Another group of songs are the songs that talk about what it's like to die under the German occupation. And these are the most heartbreaking songs in the collection. Often they're written by children. And the dates of this song suggest that many of these children did not live for much longer after that, because ghettos where they were or other places they were hiding were destroyed. So sometimes they're written in 1942, or sometimes early in 1943. And they talk about hunger, starvation, loss of hope. And above all, they talk about how they fear that nobody will ever remember that they existed, and nobody will ever care. Nobody ever cares about what's happening to Jews. And finally, there is a group of songs that are humorous songs, something that we didn't really expect to find, but there are quite a bit of them. They're laughing at fascism, they're ridiculing Hitler, they're ridiculing German army, and they're actually laughing, hoping that the normal life will come back, so they live through the difficult times satirizing their enemy.
Tell us a little bit about your own background and how you became involved in this.
Well, I'm a historian of Soviet Jews, Soviet Jewish history and culture. My books talk about Jewish daily life in the Soviet Union under Stalin. And I was working on a book that just came out last year called When Sonia Met Boris, An Oral History of Jewish Life Under Stalin. So I was looking for materials, archival materials that could give me some insights on what it was like to be a Jew in the Soviet Union. And when I found the songs, it took me to another direction. These songs that survived in this archive did not survive in any of the oral histories that I have conducted. And I conducted almost 500 interviews with people born in the Soviet Union in the 20s. So that told me that these songs really didn't make it into historical memory. And I thought that it would be that it's important to and interesting to bring these materials into the public sphere as music rather than as historical books. So I involved an artist, Psoy Korolenko, Russian-born artist who performs Jewish and Russian music, to help me find the tunes for these songs and also to perform them. And that's how this project began. I work at the University of Toronto, specialist also in Yiddish culture.
How did you choose the songs for this album? There are 18 of them. I don't know if that was on purpose, the number 18. But if there were hundreds of these found, how did you choose the ones to put on the album?
That's a great question. So it was not an easy choice because each one's song tells a unique story of a person who sang, in very difficult circumstances. But a few things. A, the most unusual songs, the ones that don't look like anything we have from existing collections of the Holocaust music, from Warsaw Ghetto, from Lodz Ghetto, from Vilna Ghetto. We wanted something unusual, something that tells different experience. B, we wanted a lot of humorous songs because that's, again, unusual. And also we don't talk as much as we should about how people being able to laugh during the destruction. Then we wanted to give voices to songs authored by women and children. So we gave a little bit of priority to that. And generally just to give a slice of experiences of Soviet Jews during the war. So, we try to balance songs written under the German occupation, the songs written in Central Asia, and songs written in the Red Army. So in other words, the goal was, it was not the aesthetic goal. Like most of the texts of the songs are really very primitive. And honestly, they win in English and in Russian translations that we have. They're much better in translation because they're translated by poets and intellectuals. The original Yiddish is rough folk song written by people who are not poets, so not songwriters, but this emotion that they feel, they want to express it through music and this rhymed, simply rhymed words, and we wanted to give them a voice. So aesthetic criteria was not one of our criteria.
Yeah, something I noticed when I was listening to it is that some of the music almost sounds like bluegrass music.
Well, that's our arrangers. Yeah, so the music, the actual tunes, They were kind of matched by Psoy Korolenko, who matched these words to the songs that were popular in the Soviet Union during this time. The Berigovsky wrote in his notes that people sang the songs to popular Soviet, Ukrainian, Russian, and some Yiddish songs. That's the only information we had. We don't know which one. So Psoy found some songs that were popular in the Soviet Union, like Katyusha, written by Matt Blunter in 1938, or, I don't know, Tumbalalaika, a famous Yiddish song popular in the 40s and all this, and brought it together. And then Sergei Yerdenko, a St. Petersburg-based violinist, made arrangements for these tunes, for the Soviet tunes. And sometimes it got bluegrass a little bit. Sometimes it got Roma influence in them, because Sergei Yerdenko is a form of Roma music, also Roma himself. So he wanted to bring that story in, also to tell the story of the plight of Roma. So they took their life on their own a little bit. And the goal of this project is not kind of give the musical authentic sound to this texts, because obviously they probably sing them differently, but to tell the story in their own words, but so that the audience of the 21st century will listen and will understand and hopefully appreciate it, that. So we took a little bit more imagination and leap of faith in musical arrangements rather than sticking with what we thought would be authentic. But not a single word of a single song was changed. So that's exactly how they were in the archive.
In the booklet that comes with the record, with the CD, the lyrics are only in English and Russian. And I was wondering why you didn't include the Yiddish with or without transliteration, but the actual Yiddish words themselves. Because I was a little disappointed, I speak a little bit of Yiddish, and I found that the singing was so clear that I could really understand a lot of it myself, which made me very proud of myself. But I would have liked to have had the words written in Yiddish.
Right. So the label wouldn't let us, but all the Yiddish words, all the Yiddish lyrics are online. It's on if you look, yiddishglory.com, we put all the Yiddish texts in Yiddish letters and in Latin transliteration, as well as translation. It's all online. You can look at it. And this was the discussion we had with the label. They said that we shouldn't put too much. So the booklet would have been too big, and they didn't want that. So that's a compromise for the music industry we had to make.
Are you planning to continue with this project and record more albums?
You know, I'm planning to work on more songs, and I don't know if I can make definitive plans on recording more albums, because as I learned, music industry is an expensive adventure, and it's a lot of work, so I don't know exactly what will happen, but there are a lot of songs in there, and it is my intention to bring them to life one way or another. And also, you know, like this website will develop, and once we put the texts and the tunes that we have in, it is my hope that other musicians will also find it of interest.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that we might have left out?
Well, you know, we're talking today, a few days after the shooting that took place in a synagogue in Pittsburgh. You know, it's the first massacre of that scale in United States against Jews. And it gave us a pause to think about I thought of this material as a historical material, as something that's talking about the past, something that talks about Jews being in danger in some other place. And, you know, the whole purpose of that story is that we don't forget that it happened. But suddenly, unfortunately, this project has a contemporary feel, because we are now at loss of words of how to make sense of what's happening when Jews are being killed for being Jewish in 2018 for going to synagogue. And I look at this material and we think about strength that it took from people who lived in this unthinkable conditions, experienced the violence, did not know whether they'll see tomorrow. Many of them did not see tomorrow, and somehow managed to write music in the face of all that. So I think thinking about dangers of fascism and dangers of hate is always timely, but unfortunately, it's especially timely because of when you and I speak about this.
Thank you very much, Anna.
Oh, thank you so much for talking to me.
This next selection is Mama's Groove, My Mother's Grave. It was written by a 10-year-old and details the grieving of a young child who has lost his mother. This week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner at RadioSefarad.com. Finally, I'll leave you with one of the more optimistic selections from the album. Victory Song was written in 1945 and invites listeners to have a drink and be joyful, because soon the German murderers will be out of their lives forever. See you next week.
Seit kommen euch die Ende von Leiden und von Pein. Schotten sie wird ihr klappen und kritzen mit die Zehn. Was ihr sind da so schlecht mit uns gewesen? Da klappt der Gloss und Gläser und nimmt das Weibel Reisel und geht mit mir an den Zoller der Fahrt. Weil so viel sich gießen und Braufen so viel fließen und mir umgehen an jüdischen Bulgar. Da seid sich mit Samaya und trinkt schon euch was mehr. Weil die deutschen Mörders wollen nicht schon mehr nicht sehen, das sowjetische Land mit der stalinischen Hand wird weisen, wo sie es kennt. Thank you.
Chaim for the Reuter Armee und wünsche werde alle als gesund sein sollen sei und wünsche dem Chaver Stalin soll sein mit Jonas Ach weil auf der ganzen Welt ist keiner zu ihm gleich. L'chaim! L'chaim!